Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
I'm not hearing you. This is Dr. Tim, Mind Shifters Radio. Jeannie, are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Michael and I both have been having challenges this morning on our phones, so let me know if it doesn't come through very clear. We welcome everybody to Mind Shifters Radio. And I think Michael has just joined us. I can hear his walking in the background or whatever. So we want to welcome Michael to the show. Welcome, Dr. Tim. Glad you're here. Today is Tuesday, April 14th, 2015. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. With us?
I am, and you're coming through loud and clear. There's the odd word that drops out, Jeannie, but otherwise you sound pretty good. Can you hear me?
Yep, you're coming through good.
Oh, good. Strange. We spent 10 minutes on the phone a little while ago, and I think we got maybe a quarter of the words that each of us said. So I guess it's the combination of the two phones at once. In any event, welcome to the show. We're honored and delighted that you're here to join us in this this ancient project of learning how to change the root content of our mind that generates and creates the world that we see. Last night at Unity in Gainesville, by the way, we've got one more workshop tonight. We're doing Naturopathic Keys to Health. But last night we did, we actually started out with the lesson, Introduction to Advanced Understanding of A Course in Miracles. And, you know, my favorite lesson from the course, because it's one of the most misunderstood and one of the clearest lessons on how to distinguish what the course is really talking about, is the one that says, what is the world? And so I did a little bit of conversation about that, and there were several course students there who were just like, what? What are you talking about? What? So we ended up deciding as a group to switch the conversation. And instead of doing Introduction to Advanced Understanding of A Course in Miracles, we did, what is the world? And so the thought is to maybe bring that lesson forward, or bring the ideas from that lesson forward, and get clear on where this act of perception, where and how this acception happens, and where do you have to go to change the world that you see. Most people who live in our culture, or actually, I guess it's pretty much most of the cultures of the globe, at least the ones I've interacted with, which have been several, most of them have this belief that when they look out through their eyes, they're looking out through windows and they're seeing what's there. And that is just such an absolute fallacy that it's amazing. And the course, it's about making that clear. If you haven't done any work with A Course in Miracles, it's about making clear that there are two different worlds that need to be dealt with. One of them needs forgiveness. The other one needs nothing except to be experienced. And most people are trying to apply, my experience is, most people are trying to apply forgiveness to a place where no forgiveness is needed, and that is what's called the world out there. People who work with the Course, I think, don't realize in many cases that the Course uses the word world in two distinctly different ways. Particular lesson I call the lowercase w world, and then there's the uppercase w world. There's the world that the Creator created. There's the actual world, and then there's the one that we paint on our eyeballs from the inside with the contents of our own minds. We quoted the CIA research, which we've talked about recently on the show, that says that most people think that perception is a passive process, but in their words, it's demonstrably active, and that we do not record reality. Our minds construct reality. That's the CIA. Our minds construct literally the world that we see. Now, you would think with Course in Miracles, you wouldn't very often find a CIA website that agrees with some of the deeper understandings of the Course in Miracles, but this is in fact one place where they perfectly support and bring forward the understanding that everything we see is a construct painted on the inside of our eyes, and we look out through that painting and we only see the painting. We don't see anything outside of us. And the painting that we see is a reflection of the contents of our own minds. And when you recognize that, then you realize that the place where forgiveness needs to be applied, and that is thinking of forgiveness in terms of it being the way that you remove content that doesn't belong in your mind, the place that forgiveness is to be applied is strictly internal and to your mind. And when you apply forgiveness to the content of your mind, the content never belonged within you. You use forgiveness as a scoop to remove it. So think removal, think scoop. Whenever you think forgiveness, as opposed to what the Greek culture has taught us, and that is that, of course, somebody out there is the problem, and we're going to be nice about it. They're the cause of our pain, but we're going to be nice about it because we're going to let them off the hook. We're going to supposedly forgive them. Absolutely, totally, completely, 1,000% false. That process of letting someone else off the hook for what's going on inside of you has absolutely nothing to do with forgiveness. So never forgive your children, never forgive your parents, never forgive your spouse, never forgive your neighbor, never forgive your employer, never forgive your government, never forgive anybody for anything because you can't. But if your spouse, your parent, your child, your neighbor, your government, your employer, your employee happens to resonate some form of hostility or fear in you, then with the paintbrush of hostility or fear, you paint a picture on the inside of your eyeballs of them, or at least what you think is them, and then you look at that picture and you're sure that you're looking out there in the actual 3D world, and you're not. You're looking at a 3D picture painted on the inside of your eyeballs as you believe that the world is the problem. The way that you can verify that for yourself is that while you stand and proclaim, look what they've done to me, look how terrible, look how much pain they've caused me, you'll notice that you're the one who's experiencing the pain. Now, short of somebody come up and cancel the thought, punching you in the nose, nobody can cause you pain. But if you've got pain in there, that pain literally is an energy, and energy by definition is motion, and motion creates energy waves. And so if there's pain in there, you are continuously setting up an energy wave that will draw, resonate, or attract someone into your space to do whatever it is that you need to have done in order to get the opportunity once again to directly confront the root of your pain. But what most people do is remain in a state of denial. And I've actually considered going to the government and suggesting they have a 51st state, and it would be the state of denial because that's where virtually everyone lives. What is our definition of denial? When I think or speak as though someone outside of me is the cause of something inside of me, I'm in denial. So when I say, and our whole culture lives in this language, you made me mad, you hurt me. Do you know how that makes me feel when you say that? It's all total, complete denial. And what happens when we enter into that state of denial, when we talk about how it's that person over there that's making me feel this way, is we cut ourselves off from the feelings that we need to heal, interact with those feelings while we're using them to paint our mind's picture of someone else. And the energy with which we paint that picture is the energy that we spray all over whoever that picture is about. Whether that person is standing there in front of us or whether they're 10,000 miles away, it doesn't matter. There is no space when it comes to energy movement. It's virtually instantaneous. So if I paint the picture on the inside of my eyeballs out of the hate that someone resonates in me and I talk to them about how hateful they are, then I'm spraying an energy on them. And guess what they're going to tend to do? If they have any hate in them, they tend to going to function hatefully. And you'll say, see, I was right. There you go. No, they responded to what you sprayed on them. You know, if it's a really hot day and you spray cool water on people, people go, ah, thank you. If it's a really hot day and you spray sulfuric acid on people, people are not going to be thanking you. They're going to be probably wanting to punch you in the nose. Again, cancel the thought. So recognize that every perception you have, person on the planet, whether they are present or not, sends an energy out that contributes to and supports them functioning the way you see them. The invitation of the Course is to vote differently. What's the vote? I vote to paint the pictures in my mind of you and everyone else out of love. And then when I spray that energy on you, that becomes a vote. And the vote is that support for you functioning as your true human beingness. And when one person selects love, it begins to resonate or wake up the love in everyone that they touch. And so the only place that you want to be about applying forgiveness, if you want to pardon somebody, great, do that with your spouse or your parents or your children or whoever. But if you want to do forgiveness work, then you must acquire the skill and the tools of dropping inside of your own mind under the surface of the picture painted behind your eyeballs. And when you drop into that, which is what first century Aramaic forgiveness allows you to do, then if you bring love with you to that space, then those things that are based in hostility or fear will literally begin to dissolve and disappear from your life. So that's what we're here to support, disappearing hostility and fear from planet Earth through forgiveness. Inspiring people to use the tool to recognize that, and the denial system is so powerful. I mean, it's just so amazing how people can hide from themselves what's really going on. But all we have to do is language that things are different than the way we perceive it. And now you've got a split world. When you begin to forgive those energies in you that separate you from others, that become the wall and form the picture you paint on the inside of your eyeballs that separates you, when you begin to drop that energy, all of a sudden what happens is the connectedness and the oneness that is truly there begins to be realized. I love Einstein's quote where he speaks of that. He says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. Your brain is telling you a lie. The only place that forgiveness needs to be applied is to our optical illusions. And as we apply forgiveness to our optical illusions, what happens is, when we rid ourselves of, when we integrate, when we dissolve an energy that doesn't belong, then the root of the output of our minds, the paintbrush we paint the pictures on the inside of our eyeballs with, changes. And all of a sudden, we miraculously see a different person in front of us. Gee, this person was so hateful yesterday, and today they're so loving. Well, if you were spraying acid on them yesterday and there was any hate in them, they were probably pretty hateful. If you're spraying love on them today, and when you perceive them through the paintbrush in your mind of love, when that's what you create your pictures of them out of, that's what you're spraying on them. And people tend to respond differently, and they call that a miracle. And, of course, if you have no idea what's going on, that really looks pretty miraculous. The truth is, we're creators. We make up the world we've been trained to see. We believe what we've been trained to see. And then we go out and we collect evidence to prove that it's true. And those who have matching bags of garbage to our bags of garbage will tend to be drawn to us. The law of resonance is a law of energy exchange. And the law of resonance in the human world creates attraction. The law of resonance creates motion. You know, in the inanimate world, the law of resonance just creates motion. I had a middle C tuning fork on a desk. I put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork. The second tuning fork starts to vibrate. There is motion where a moment ago there was no motion. But in inanimate system, in animate systems, human life, resonance creates motion toward. So whoever holds the energy that matches what we are building our perceptions out of will tend to come play out of those energies. When we begin to collapse, forgive, remove those energies, then everything starts to change. We're simply here to support everything changing. Let's get on with real human life. You know, if you hold a newborn child, you know exactly what a human being is. What would happen if tomorrow 7.5 billion people woke up as humans? Hold that newborn. What do you find? You find this awesome active presence of love. Imagine 7.5 billion people waking up on planet Earth, totally connected to love, creativity, and abundance. The problems of the world would be solved overnight. And actually, I should say, the problems of human or non-human life would be solved overnight. There's a man 2,000 years ago who knew exactly the answer to the dilemma. And those who are thriving off of and making money from the insane world get rid of people like that power structure. You'll notice 2,000 years ago, yes, it was wiped out. Why? Because he threatened the power structure. Now, they made up a story that it was for suffering and all that stuff. All that stuff is a fraud. There's one reason. He said to people, know the truth and the truth will set you free. Let me tell you the truth. Ask and you receive. Seek and you will find. Knock, it will be open to you. Of the works of the Creator, command performance. And when you realize that and you start to change what you're setting in motion, everything changes. When everything changes, the people who are scamming and making money off of, you know, making their livelihood, as the Pharisees were back a couple of thousand years ago, say, hey, wait a minute, he's threatening our livelihood. I don't want to have to go out and get a job. I don't want to go out and pick up a shovel and start to work. I got a pretty good thing going here. You know, I get the best of the lambs, I get the best of the calves, and this guy's threatening the whole game. Let's get rid of him. There's the real reason they got rid of him. The other is a black ops story. When every covert operation, like that one was, the black ops story set up in advance, and it's told, and it's told, and it's told, and it's told, and it's told forever. Don't believe the lie. He threatened the power structure. And, fortunately, I think we're at a place where there's enough awareness and wealth in the world now. Power structure's finished being threatened, and human life is becoming more valuable. You know, there's been so much wealth that's been acquired, and people are watching their children commit suicide and become drug addicts and alcoholics and saying, but wait a minute, I gave them everything. Yeah, well, you see, you didn't give them anything if you gave them stuff. What you needed to give them was human life. what you needed to do was paint the picture on the inside of your eyeballs of those kids out of love rather than out of your unresolved hostility or fear. Then what? Guess what? Kids wouldn't be committing suicide. They wouldn't be becoming drug addicts or alcoholics. The game would be different. And I think that's becoming more and more available to people so that, you know, the time for this having to kill someone who brings a higher message is over. And when people see the light and the possibility that's there, they switch, they shift. And so come join us. So it's a delight to have you with us today. Dr. Tim, what's exciting in your world? How do you be?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Cool. You know, I probably should throw in there that if people aren't familiar with the forgiveness process, they can go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and there's a bullseye in the middle of the page. Click that and follow the links. It'll give you all the free support you need. All how the whole process is done is there. So we're delighted to be able to offer that to you. So I just thought I'd throw that in before we hear from you, sir. What's exciting? You had a support group last night.
No, that's going to be tonight. This is only Monday. I mean, yesterday was Monday. Today's Tuesday. So
today's
the
Tuesday.
Support groups are on Tuesday and Thursday.
Right.
And cool. I always like to point out when you mention the website that the forgiveness process is just one of the numerous worksheets and tools that you have on there. And all of them are designed to help uncover that which is less than love and then actually have the worksheet process to remove it.
Yes, yay. And it's just like, you know, in the computer world now, everybody's saying, well, we have an app for that. Well, we have a worksheet for that.
Yeah, we have.
I've been referred to as a worksheet making fool.
We have things gearing up here. Work the group tonight, and next week at this time we'll be hosting Dale Allen Hoffman. He'll run the support group.
Awesome.
He's going to be here on Sunday to give the talk at the Unity Church in Woodstock and then do a workshop from 12:30 to 3 and then a workshop Monday night from 7 to 9. Excuse me.
So what are the workshops that he's doing? What are the topics he's doing, Tim?
Isn't it just like you to ask me what I don't have in my hands? Let's see.
Okay.
I can pull it up here in a minute. The thing he's doing on the church in the church is about the hold on just a minute.
Well, we'll just say that it's such a blessing, and anybody that's in the Chicagoland area, you know, I don't care if you're on the south side of Chicago, it'll be worth making a drive up to Woodstock to catch what Dale's doing, and, you know, go up, get a hotel room Saturday night, take their day off work Monday, and stay there for Monday, and you will be so blessed for having done that it's just amazing.
So on Sunday during the service, he'll talk about the feminine breath of eternal light. And then that afternoon, he'll give a talk titled Ancient Aramaic Secrets of Isis, Mary Magdalene. And then on in that talk, he'll just explore questions about Mary and who she might have been and ancient Aramaic insights from the teachings about Miriam Magdalitha, also known as Mary Magdalene.
Cool.
And then on Monday night, he's going to do from 7 to 9 he calls it an intimate gathering from ancient Aramaic and Hebrew vocal intonations, chants, prayers, conscious breath work, and more. And then on Tuesday night, I think we're going to have more of a, we'll let him talk a little bit and then open up to questions. As we were laying it out in the planning, he said that'll be more questions and answers on Tuesday, just like it was pretty much the time he was here just about a year ago.
Well, that's pretty awesome. That's
well,
cool.
I'm excited and looking forward to it.
Yeah, shortly after that, we're going to get to play with him down here in Florida. He's going to come and participate toward the end of teacher training, and we're going to do a videotaping. At least we're planning at this point to do a videotaping of Aramaicisms, a conversation that we've been working on for a couple of years on the key ideas from the Aramaic that have been lost and or twisted by the Greek translation. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a fun part of our teacher training, this intensive coming up.
Well, I enjoy it, and people ask me on a regular basis, well, haven't you heard that already, and haven't you heard him give that talk? And and I keep trying to explain to people who don't have this concept yet that every time I reach into something, every time I try to learn something, this ties in my mind with what you were talking about earlier with perception and how active perception is. And I was taught when I was younger that perception is very passive. If I just go to the window and look out and I open my eyes and I see, I'm going to see everything that's out there. And what we're learning more and more about is how very highly selective we are in what we perceive and how we construct our own internal realities. So every time I hear a lecture by someone like Dr. Michael Rice or Dale Allen Hoffman, or even at Guy Finley or Rex Montague Bauer or whoever's doing the teaching, I'm only getting what my current state of mind will allow into my perception. And, you know, we joke about it, how you found this creative genius years ago to help you record your CDs and DVDs so that every time they're played, you get different content out of them.
Right.
Well, this morning, I was doing housework and listening to The Way of Mastery again. And I had another one of those examples hit me where it came into my awareness that there's a piece of one of the lessons that I'd completely blocked out prior to this morning. And it's just a little piece, you know, seemingly. I clearly prior to this thought it was not so important. But as I listened, I backed up the tape and I played it again, and sure enough, it's right there. It's always been there. Yet prior to this, every time I listened to it, I omitted that from my awareness or suppressed it from my awareness so I could take a completely different meaning from the lesson. And as I stopped and thought about it, I thought, oh, this meaning really fits much more with the meaning I took from it originally, the first umpteen times I heard it, fits a lot more with my Catholic upbringing about sacrifice and about lack. And if I let this other piece in, it really says there is none of that. And I just thought, wow, how powerful is it that, you know, I read this passage probably 15 or 20 times before I decided to record it so I could listen to it while I was doing other things.
Right.
And I've probably listened to it now at least as many times as I originally read it. And not once did I let myself register the meaning of this particular piece, which changes the interpretation dramatically.
Yep.
And it changes it from one of sacrifice for the greater good to one of there is no sacrifice. It's all being given abundantly all the time.
Yes.
And it was all about my active, very active, selective perception blocking out that piece of the lesson.
Well, you know, there's a line we've talked about often in the Course in Miracles that says, you must be aware of the distorting power of the way you want it to be. And, of course, we all want what we were taught as innocent children to be true. We want the authorities in our lives to have been perfect and never lied to us or really truly known the truth and given it to us. And that desire is what blocks the ability to be in truth. That's why one of the important scales, one of the most important scales on the personal code evaluation that we do for intensives and that we're going to be training people in during this teacher's training is love of truth. And if I have this need and desire for something to be true that isn't, or something to be accurate that's off base, you know. Oh, I was told that this fear-based interpretation was just the cat's meow and the way it is. And if I question that, then I'm questioning, you know, this person who was my authority. And if I do that, then I'll be struck dead with lightning, or I'll be sent to hell, or whatever the threats were. So the mind holds unconsciously the desire to make sure that everything that we were taught by those authorities who threatened us into belief, and if you think that anything to do with the glove and the creator's got to be threatened into belief, you're thinking a lie. But if you unconsciously have to keep that being true, then, you know, those old interpretations are going to keep coming in and truth won't be available. So it sounds like another breakthrough for you. I love the way I don't remember the guy who said it, but he said, you know, only an open mind can contain the secrets of the universe. So the preconceived notions are a disaster for truth. It's a disaster. And, of course, people who haven't had the experience of what Yeshua was talking about can't accurately understand it or write about it. And you got to know that somebody standing there railing has never known the experience of the man who says, love those who hate you, do good to those who despitefully use you. Just, you know, it's just not known. And so the truth couldn't be told by them, but being the authority, they had to stand up and force everybody to believe that what they had was truth on pain of excommunication. You probably remember that word, right?
Sorry, my mute button wouldn't come off. Yes, I remember that word very well, and the threat implied with it.
Yes. Yeah. Excommunication means you're going to spend eternity in the hellfire in the name of love.
Well, and even probably worse than that.
Because you have the audacity to ask a question.
Right, but probably even worse than an eternity in hellfire, you're literally isolated from your community. You become an outcast.
You're ostracized, you know. I remember working with some folks who had friends down in Alabama. This goes back about 30 years ago. And they had friends who their son, as he grew up, wouldn't swallow everything he was told. And about the age of 12, because he was asking questions at church, he was just asking questions. The parents recommended that they take this kid to a psychiatrist. And I guess the psychiatrist was in the same mindset as the people who recommended that the parents take the kid to the psychiatrist for asking questions at church, for actually having the audacity to question what he was being told. And they did electroshock on this kid at the age of 12 for asking questions in church. That's like, how insane does that get? But, you know, it's hard for those who swim. You know, I think the fish probably couldn't tell you much about water. It's such an all-pervasive part of their environment. And for people who swim in fear all the time, it's hard for them to hear a conversation, difficult to hear a conversation. That's why the scripture said, hear a little, there a little, with stammering lips in another tongue while I speak to you. The Creator's always there offering it to us. And really, once again, that's projection, because it's with stammering ears and another tongue that we're listening. And so being able to shift out of listening through fear, and how can you tell if you have fear? Well, if somebody violates one of your infantile goals, do you instantly go into some form of hostility toward them? If you do, then the root of your perceptual mind is fear. And it's the human mind's supposed to function off of love. That's its power supply. That's the first law in the whole game. And yet, those who interpret through fear brain cells pound in so deeply that terror that people rarely in their lives will even begin to be able to fathom how to question, let alone truly do it. There's such a deep need for that to stay true, even though it's patently false when you measure it up against what Yeshua actually said. So it's certainly an interesting process to understand how that game works and how people can be brainwashed to believe anything.
Yeah, and somebody who knows the kind of work I do posted something or tagged me in a post on Facebook that leads to an MSN.com article that says acetaminophen may blunt both positive and negative emotions. And it lists a study that says from Ohio State University, it reduces people's positive emotions when they take acetaminophen.
Yeah.
Which is Tylenol.
Mm-hmm.
So I just
shut them down.
I'm going to just dramatically shift what I perceive if I'm not able to feel the emotions that go with whatever thoughts get stirred up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an amazing game, and the reductionism of the world. That, you know, we cut everything up into little pieces, and a person in one specialty cannot conceive of what another specialty is even talking about, even though they're supposedly in the same field. And so, you know, if you can keep people isolated like that, and then you can get people believing all kinds of crazy stuff.
Well, I was just looked up and realized it's almost 20 till, so I thought we should ask if there's a comment in the chat room or anybody with their hand up, since we've had a lot of callers lately.
Let's go for it. Jeannie? Hello, Jeannie. I think I heard you trying to come in, but your voice didn't come across. Have we lost Jeannie? Is your mute button on, sweetheart?
Yeah, I don't hear anything either.
Well, if you're having trouble with your phone, Jeannie, maybe if there's someone on, you could just go ahead and turn them on. And if anybody's got your hand up in the phone queue, why don't you just go ahead and speak and let's say hello, see what's happening. I don't know your area code if your hand is up, but we'll ask Jeannie if she can hear me to go ahead and turn your microphone on. So if there's anybody out there that wants to ask a question or has a comment, say hello. Well, I guess for now, Tim, it's just you and I.
All right, then.
Apologies for that.
Oh. Well, that's okay.
I tried to hit my mute button, and instead I hung up.
Ah.
So I had to dial back in real quick. Okay,
the challenges
we do have a
of a new phone.
No, where my mute button usually is, it's now my connection button. But anyway, so, yes,
yeah,
we do have a caller. 541, you're on the air.
Hi.
Oh, I wonder who this is.
I'm out here in the airwaves. I was saying hello on good faith that someone could hear me.
No, we couldn't, but we got you now.
Yeah,
so what's exciting
so
in your world, Julie?
Well, a lot of things, but what I had a little specific question just because you were talking about Tylenol, and I might have missed what you said about ibuprofen. Is it a similar kind of thing where it blocks your emotions and that sort of thing?
Well, this article just says that they need to research that. They have some suspicions, but that's not what this research was done on.
Oh, okay. Because I just wanted to say I've had tooth pain and was taking ibuprofen. It worked better than Tylenol. But any of it was just like I could feel the poison and I couldn't stand it. So finally I said, that's it. I'm not taking anymore. I did a whole bunch of vitamin C to flush myself out, the powdered kind that you mix in water and just drink it. And I didn't do too much. I mean, I didn't go obsessive with it. I just did a couple of days once each day. And anyway, the vitamin C helped, but it was also me saying, that's it, I don't want these poisons in my body. And it took away the tooth pain went away, the swelling went away, everything went away.
Cool, nice work.
That's awesome.
And that vitamin C is a natural antibiotic. So.
Oh, well, plus I was thinking it is water soluble, and so that's why I used it. But that's good to know. That's good. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And that's all I really had to share. I'm definitely appreciating everything you said about the two worlds. You know, I started a new, if no one's on the line, I started a new Course in Miracles group, or there was a new one started by some new people who wanted to do something a little different with it. And lo and behold, gradually, after a few weeks, more and more of the old stoic members of the old Course in Miracles group started attending and taking over with all of their rigidity. Not stoic, but dodginess, I guess. And that whole thing about two worlds, they still are caught up on this isn't real and I'm not really here. And I just don't know how to cut through that, and I've stopped trying again. I just don't try.
Invite them to spend time looking at the lesson, what is the world? And recognize that, you know, that lesson makes it so simple. The first line of that lesson says, the world is false perception. And what I do to illustrate that is I do, if you've seen, and you've probably seen me do this, I'll put a drawing of what would be an airplane propeller on the board. And I say, okay, so the propeller is spinning. We bring a man from the jungles of South America, and he looks at the airplane propeller. Does he see forearms spinning around the pivot point, which is what we know the airplane propeller is? And, of course, he does not. He sees a shiny silver disc. He sees something that isn't there. That's the world of false perception. If someone were to look at what they call my body, they would not see a body. They'd see a whirling mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. And the body is the same as the shiny silver disc. It's a picture in the mind built by a perceptual system that can't keep up with the rate of spin of the actual airplane propeller or of my actual energy field or yours or anyone else's. That could be a way to start to open that one. I did have, somebody did ask the question recently about the book, The Disappearance of the Universe. And I did tap into a little bit of that, having gone through the whole thing. And it might have been you, I'm not sure. Julie did ask that a few weeks ago. But I think it's completely out in left field. So they talk about, you know, these two entities that come to this guy talk about how, well, you know, how cunning of us. We created all these trees, and we created the mountains, and we created beautiful sunsets and bodies that, you know, have babies, and, you know, how awesome, how smart are we to have done that? It's like, bingo, we got the world confused. And the primary mover in the course for the first 25 or so years were people who, my take, were basically thinking out of a medieval monastery mind that condemned the world that the Creator created. You know, sex was bad, the world was bad, you know, you have to reject everything, and a misinterpretation. And so that's what I think a lot of people are doing with the Course, instead of recognizing that the Course is about shifting, changing, removing the world of false perception, the picture between our ears based in our own errant content. So that might be a way to start to open that. The other thing you might do is suggest to the group at some point, I think you've got all the DVDs, you might suggest that one night they get together and watch the Introduction Advanced Understanding of the Course, the DVD of that. And that, I think, makes that whole message pretty clear for people who are ready to get it. And it's a shock. I mean, over the years, I've visited a lot of Course in Miracles groups, and people are like, well, this makes so much sense, but no, it can't be right. It can't be right. We've always been taught it was. Like, no, you did not. You know, and the Course even says itself, says, you think not you made the world. Illusions, yes. False perception, yes. But what is true in heaven and earth is beyond your naming. You know, the actuality that the Creator created is the gift. And when we clean up the world of false perception, we will experience the gift directly.
And you said earlier that forgiveness is the means for clearing out false perception. But then they go into their mindset about forgiveness, you know. And so how did you say that earlier? Or can you say it again?
Well, I've never found anyone working with the Course that has found the definition of forgiveness from the Course and used it. If you go to workbook lesson 240,
okay,
there, I think it's about the seventh paragraph, the precise and exact definition that Yeshua gave forgiveness in the original Aramaic is right there in the Course. But if you don't have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, you just gloss over it. And I gloss over it for years. Until I found it in the Aramaic, I had no idea what that passage meant. Now, having the brain cells from the Aramaic, I read this passage just like it's so obvious. But
okay.
I've never found anybody working with the Course who knows how to forgive. Anybody. And that passage in the Course says this. And remember, the word forgive is shebag in Aramaic, which means to cancel. So that passage in Workbook Lesson 240 says, let go of all the things you think you want. Your trifling treasure, your goal, put away. That inferior desire of your mind, put away. And leave a clean and open space within your mind. In other words, when you cancel your goal, you will collapse your false perception. Collapse your false perception, love will rush in to repair what's underneath it. And that's forgiveness.
Michael,
yes.
I have the Course in Miracles book open, and the page that says, what is the world, that you quoted from before, is right next to Lesson 240. And Lesson 240 is only one paragraph and didn't have any of the words that you said. So is it a lesson or is it a section in the text?
No, it's in a lesson. I maybe I'm mistaken on the number of the lesson. Just Google it. Just Google, let go all the things you think you want. A Course in Miracles, it'll take you right to that passage.
Okay. All right. I have a concordance. I'll do that.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay,
awesome.
Good. Thank you.
If you're going to use a concordance, you'd probably find it faster by looking up trifling treasure.
Okay. Trifling treasure. I've so wanted to know where you correlated what the Aramaic has revealed and where it's found in the Course. So this is it, right?
That's it. That's the core of forgiveness.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
And I go into that in that lesson of Introduction to Advanced Understanding of A Course in Miracles. You know,
okay.
The Course basically says, and you know, in that lesson, I synthesize about 70 different lessons, and it says you must return your mind to the moment at which the original incident happens, and then it goes into how you do that. You cancel your goal, that collapses perception, and you get to drop into the next level of your mind that needs healed. And then that lesson, then it goes on to say, or the synthesis that I put together there, goes on to say, you know, that the solution, the what Rukh will do for you will be fast and merciful. But make sure that you don't hide any spot of suffering, because if you do, then you're holding a darkened place within your mind where healing isn't welcome.
Yeah.
So, and then it goes on to say, exempt no one from your love. The person, body, that you say, oh, I can't stand that person, they're so terrible, is a picture painted on the inside of your eyeballs based on what that person resonates in you that you are terrified to resolve. And so they're the symbol of it. We paint a picture of a body that exists nowhere in the world but in our minds. Yes, there is this person out there, this energy field, and we overlay them with the picture in our minds, and because with the picture in our minds, if it's based in hostility or fear, we're literally spraying hostility and fear on them, they'll tend to function that way. And so
Michael,
it says, exempt no one from the active presence of love. You have a thought there, Tim?
It's lesson 164.
164. Ah, there you go.
Oh, thank
cool.
you.
Thank you.
And it's near the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's, what, the seventh paragraph or so? Right,
the second
right
to the last
the
paragraph where it says, open the curtain in your practicing by merely letting go all things you think you want. your trifling treasures put away and leave a clean and open space within your mind where Christ can come and offer you the treasure of salvation.
Yep. The active presence of love now drops into the part of the mind that holds the pain. The part of the mind that holds the pain dissolves in the presence of love, and that's where the core of forgiveness happens.
Michael, the word goal, the word goal, I learned from you in your work, and I know you found that through the Aramaic, and then all of a sudden, of course, I'm noticing it in the course. That it was referred to, but I didn't have eyes to see or ears to hear. So is that what happened with you, too, that you suddenly saw the word goal and realized that's the key or a key?
Well, no, the realization that the goal was the key came from the Aramaic.
Well, how
did
it translate?
And then when you read that passage, all the things you think you want, what is the thing you think you want? That's your goal.
Uh-huh, okay. Also, Dale Allen Hoffman, he reminds us, and I think you do too, about prayer, that we're always praying, that that's what our thoughts are primarily, and what we're praying for is always in its entirety. And so the work that you've set forth with worksheets, Michael, helps us see more of the entirety in the unconscious that we're praying for all the time, resonates to us.
And the parts of our mind that hold pain that we want to hold on to, another really nice point the Course makes, the Course says, its enemy is wholeness. You know, the part that we hold apart saying, yes, this person and they and they're separate and they're apart from me, the enemy to that is wholeness, is getting back to the connectedness. And then you go back and you listen to David Bohm and his conversations with Krishnamurti, and he talks about unbroken wholeness, that the truth of who we are can only come from unbroken wholeness. Now, the regulatory speech isn't so great there, but in essence what he's saying is only when you get past the illusion of the mind that we're all separate from each other, then in that wholeness, in that interconnectedness, we can come forward as whole beings.
Oh, that's really good. Oh, thank you so much.
Hey, good breath. There's one of those healing breaths. I love to hear those.
Yeah, really. Thank you. Well, I said yesterday I've been getting really aware of my non-being self, just how it is separate and that who I am isn't. And so I don't know what to say about what I'm seeing, but I am seeing it, so it's cool.
And remember that in the Aramaic, your non-being self is the neighbor to your true self.
Mm-hmm.
And so that law that says you maintain the condition of love in your mind when you think of neighbor, that neighbor that is the non-being self will only heal in the presence of active love. And so remember that the non-being self, the self constructed out of false ideas that are basically messages from our power persons, is a neighbor to the truth of who we are.
The non-being self is the one that thinks it's in the world, too.
Yes.
So
And it is in the world between its ears. It's the only place it exists. The only place anyone exists as a body is in their own or another's mind. The truth of our existence has nothing to do with that. But we look in the mirror, and just like the guy who looks at the shiny or the spinning propeller and sees a shiny silver disc, he thinks the shiny silver disc is really, truly there because he sees it, he experiences it. The same way that the mind produces an illusion. You know, the shiny silver disc only exists in the mind of the person who's looking at the propeller, and it's because he has a deficiency in perception that he produces that shiny silver disc. The only reason we produce a world of bodies is because we have a deficiency in perception. We can't keep up with the rate of spin of what's actually happening here. But if you were to see what's actually happening, you'd see this whirring mass, again, of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light, for want of another term for them. You know, the world of physics is starting to approach that, is starting to crack the appearance world and starting to understand a little bit more about what's actually going on. And when we really do crack it open, we're going to find that it's so not describable in terms of the words that describe the world between our ears that it's going to be a whole revelation.
Wow. It's good.
Yeah, pretty cool.
I just want to say, I know time's almost up, but as I was relating to you that I just see my non-being self, I am seeing it with the presence of love. I'm just being in the love more. And so the non-being
cool.
self, I'm gently allowing it to just be retired from service, you know.
I'm gently
lovingly, yeah. You know, and it's great. It's great. Thank you.
Well, and every piece of forgiveness that you do begins the dissolution or enhances the dissolution of the non-being self. Because that's what the non-being self is made up of, is the thoughts based in hostility or fear that came from our power person who just didn't know any better.
And, you know, the whole thing about bodies, most people in the Course are actually afraid of losing their bodies no matter what they say. And
yep.
And I'm finding that I just have a different use of the body as well as the mind, you know, that there's, you know, and it's not even me directing it anymore. It's that which we are.
But remember, it doesn't exist. There's another conversation that goes on in the Course world that says, you know, bodies don't exist, but as long as you're living in one. You're not living in one. You've never lived in one. No such thing has ever existed.
Time's
up. In the same way that we'd say to the fellow who's looking at the shiny silver disc, sir, in no way, shape, or form does the shiny silver disc exist anywhere in the actual world. It exists as a picture in your mind only. It isn't real. Do not do behaviors based on what is not real or you'll be in trouble. And he says, well, you know, I see that shiny silver disc out there and I want to feel what the friction feels like on my fingertips. Please don't touch the propeller. Please,
we need
stop
to close
functioning
the show.
As though a body exists.
Michael.
It doesn't. Yes.
Michael, we need to close
Are
the show.
Are we time out? Okay. Well, I guess we're down to the last minute. So we'll just say thank you for being here. Remember, Friday we start teacher training, 9-day, why is this happening to me again intensive, 9-day healing the whole woman that Jeannie will be doing. And then we'll go into 3 days of training on the personal code evaluation and a 9-day teacher training. So come and play with us. We appreciate you. Create the best year yet of eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.